It's a way to get your work seen by potentially millions of people all at once. A creativity pipeline that remains unmatched, even in this era of TikTok, Instagram, podcasting, and live streaming.
Broadcast television is still considered the big leagues by many of our creators, but they still have a lot of questions about how to get there.
There's no one-size-fits-all strategy for making a leap from digital to television. You also have to consider if it's the right move for your brand and your content.
Our creators often ask what the differences are between digital platforms and broadcast TV, and which is a better fit for their work.
So don't change that channel, and let's explore the hurdles that creators can encounter on the road to the small screen and how to get over them. Welcome to First Frame, brought to you by TeleStoryHive. I'm Jennifer Park.
And I'm Cameron Zinger, and we're here to help empower new and emerging Canadian content creators by answering their most pressing questions, sharing diverse success stories, and getting insights from people who've been down this path before.
On every episode, we unpack the journey of a leading Canadian creator, or creators, all the way from inception to completion. We'll hear about their wins and their challenges, and ultimately provide the creative community with mentorship and a sense of belonging.
Canadian content creators need a podcast to call home. This is it.
So on this episode, we want to give some guidance to creators who are aiming to transition from digital content to broadcast television. We also want to highlight the differences between those forms of media to prepare creators for the shift.
The other thing we're going to talk about is the current broadcast TV landscape in Canada to help you figure out if making a leap is even the right move based on the content you're creating and the audience you're trying to target.
That's an important point because we've seen some creators struggle on traditional television despite the fact that they've been really successful on social media or digital platforms like YouTube.
Joining us for this conversation are two experts in bridging the gap between digital content creators and broadcast media. First up is Executive Director of Digital First Canada and CEO of Buffer Festival, Scott Benzi. Scott, great to see you again and welcome to First Frame.
Hi, everybody. Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
And also joining us today is YouTube consultant and one of the founders of Buffer Festival, Corrado Coya. Corrado, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So to kick things off, we'd love for you to tell our listeners and viewers a little bit about yourselves and your organization. So Scott, why don't you go first?
Digital First Canada is an advocacy group that advocates for digital creators with the government, probably better defined as self-distributors for the most part, is a better definition, but a name is a name. And Buffer Festival is Canada's largest and the second largest now running creator event on the planet, where we feature elevated content and creators in a theatrical setting while doing workshops, panels, and all that fun jazz.
And how long has it been running now?
I don't want to jump on Corrado's Kool-Aid. He's been there since the start. I'll let him talk about it.
Great segue. Thank you.
Yeah, right?
12 years. This will be the 12th year now.
Okay. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself as well?
Sure, yeah. So my name is Corrado Coya. I started YouTube in 2007. Like when Google bought YouTube was when I jumped on the cool YouTube bandwagon. And I've been making videos ever since. Really early on in like the 2010s, 2011s, when everyone was saying like, oh, this YouTube thing is cool. Like you live in your parents' basement and you film your cat and you kind of get annoyed with that over time. And you're like, no, I'm in Los Angeles filming for Disney. Like, what are you talking about? So one of the first things I did was start Buffer Festival to like show the world that creators are making good stuff. It's not just prank videos or hair tutorials. I love a good hair tutorial.
Me too.
But
me too.
It's a lot of the
jerks.
Scott, you're the odd one out on this one.
Yeah, thanks. I noticed.
Scott has a good hair day every day. That's the advantage to that. So yeah, so started Buffer to show the world that creators are making good stuff. And then since then, I've gone on to do consulting pretty much full time now and do advocacy along with Scott. And whatever I can do to help creators now is kind of the bag.
Now that we know a little bit about each of you, let's talk about TV. And I think the first thing we need to do is discuss the differences between broadcast and all the other platforms out there.
And this is something I know both of you have brought up before, that creators really need to figure out if getting on television is something they should really even aspire to do. So why is that?
Just for some context setting, let's take a little bit of a step back when we talk about being on TV. Mm-hmm. TV is just a box in somebody's living room that is now just a vehicle to show your content. So there is a distinction between somebody who's still self-distributing on a platform like YouTube can very easily be on TV. YouTube is the fastest growing app on television.
Yep.
You guys can pull up the stats, but they own television now. So there's a distinction between broadcasting and just self-distributing to that end vehicle to the audience. So just that distinction of television, everybody's on television now. It's just who's delivering it at the end of the day.
I would actually love to ask, diving into sort of the broadcast space, broadcast TV can often be considered sort of a bit of a gatekeeper compared to like open platforms like YouTube. So what are the implications of that distinction for creators?
Yeah, I think it's like anything. When you're creating on YouTube, you are your own boss. Or rather, you could say your boss is the audience. You're making for them. And if they don't like it, they'll let you know. And then you will adapt your flow for the audiences that are watching.
Right.
Once you start to get into broadcasts, you start to get layers. And there's all these different gatekeepers. And they can contribute a lot of incredibly valuable stuff, like amazing opportunities that you might not have had before. Or they could just hinder along the way. So it's definitely challenging.
Yeah, I think one of the distinctions is when you're creating content for YouTube or for any platform, we shouldn't just isolate it to YouTube, for TikTok, Rumble, Twitch, whatever it is. Those platforms are incentivized to deliver your type of content to people who want it. And one of the things we've seen is that really works on UGC platforms because your audience is going to be found based on your content. One of the challenges, and we've seen this a bunch when creators are trying to make the transition to broadcast TV or to sign up with broadcast TV, is that the relationship changes with the audience, not just in the number of check marks you have to go through to actually get the content out, but your content is now being thrown out there. It's a different relationship with the audience. When we've seen a lot of creators try to transition to broadcast television, it hasn't worked with the same success because people want to watch that content on YouTube. One of the things I've always said is we consult with broadcasters all the time. One of the things we tell the broadcasters is there's a lot of talent in the YouTube space. Try not to hire characters because characters won't translate. People expect a certain type of content when they get somewhere, but you can hire for talent. So a lot of YouTubers are great comedy writers or they're great editors or they're great cinematographers and they're great storytellers. Hire them as talent, not as their character. I mean, we saw this with Miranda Sings and Colleen Ballinger, who's probably one of the most successful YouTubers of all time. And her show on Netflix was, I mean, two seasons. It wasn't great. It was an outright failure, but it just didn't translate.
It just comes down to, it's like audience behavior. When I want to relax, I'll turn on YouTube and just watch videos or Netflix. So, but it doesn't really matter where it is. It's just more, this is where I go to find my stuff. And when I'm there, I'm there. It's like you're cozy. You're all nestled in. You're like, I'm watching YouTube. I'm scrolling through YouTube Shorts. I don't then want to be told, okay, now put down your phone, go over there, sit on the couch and do something different. If that's what I'm in the mood for, sure. But the relationship that I've built up with YouTubers is watching them on YouTube. That's the habit I'm in. And so putting them in a different box kind of breaks the habit.
That makes me think of the next question I wanted to get into, which is around discoverability and distribution. Because as we talked about, there's built-in audiences. When I think of the Shorts, when I'm flipping through, I'm not picking what's coming up next. It's just putting something in front of me. So what's the difference between discovery and distribution when it comes to TV versus digital media?
I mean, I always say Shorts and TikTok and that short form content is the best discovery method on the planet right now because people consume it at such a high rate. It's not the best for building community. It's not the best for growing your channel exponentially, but it's the best for discovery. When you're in a broadcast world, you're relying on somebody else for that discovery. There's marketing budgets. Are they going to push your show? You know, did it make it into the Super Bowl or the Grey Cup spot? You're not in as much control over what that discovery looks like. Now, it's not all doom and gloom. I think, you know, there is definitely a benefit for creators to explore broadcast because it does open you up to an entirely new audience that you will never hit on YouTube because the algorithm is never going to deliver your content to certain people. Where I think in the broadcast world, there's other opportunity to find a new market, but you're in way less control of what that discovery looks like. It comes down to shelf space as well, right? Like if you look at Gem or you go on Netflix or you go on Prime, I mean, there's limited windows of shelf space on where they can put stuff.
Yeah.
Where on YouTube, it's you want it, you got it.
And then the tiles there, they're often set globally.
Yeah.
So like for every user that goes to the website, that's what they see. So whether you're 64 or 16, you see the same tiles. Mm-hmm. Where YouTube will change the tiles based on viewer behavior, what you like watching, what time of day it is, how old you are, all of the things.
What are the biggest mistakes or misconceptions that you see from creators that are trying to transition to television?
For me, the biggest one we see is that there's this giant pot of gold somewhere in traditional broadcast. Mm-hmm. I talk to a lot of creators who aspire to a film deal or a television deal, and there seems to be, especially in Canada, this misconception about how much money there actually is mm-hmm. for your show and for your program. In a lot of cases, like there are some creators where if you do the math, they're going to make more money on three videos that they self-distribute on YouTube then they are entering into like a 6-episode broadcast deal with a Canadian broadcaster.
Yeah.
So while I think there's still this panache and this aspiration of validity that broadcast gives them, there is a real misconception about what kind of money is involved, especially in the Canadian landscape. And then the other thing is ownership of IP. So creators have to realize that a lot of times when you enter into the broadcast space, you no longer own this IP.
With the exception of StoryHive.
With the exception of StoryHive.
Because all of our creators still own their IP and can do what they wish with their project after. Ours is simply a non-exclusive sort of broadcast license to put it up on our platform. So,
and I think that's amazing. I think the lack of exclusivity is good. You know, I talked to Cam probably 3 years ago about it now, and I was actually shocked mm-hmm. that, oh no, they can post it to YouTube and to our stuff, totally fine. I was like, well, that is amazing and weird, but I support it.
Right.
But in a lot of cases, that's not the case, right? Like you're going to lose ownership over your content.
Let's put the TV conversation on hold for just a second. And let's do a little segment we like to call 1 Minute Mentor.
So here's the deal. Scott and Corrado, we're going to give you each 30 seconds to share the best piece of advice you've ever been given or given out yourself when it comes to creating content. So Scott, why don't you go first?
Oh, pressure. Okay. I think the best piece of advice I can give to creators today, and especially today, is to find a way to own your audience. You cannot be beholden to platforms who own your audience, whether that's YouTube, TikTok, or a broadcaster. If you're not finding ways to generate an email list, have a Patreon, create a newsletter, create your own OTT platform, which you can do now, you're putting your future and your company and your IP in somebody else's hands. That's a terrible idea. Find a way to own your audience.
Corrado, over to you.
Mine would be, it would be copying, which sounds weird, but I think it's one of the best ways to learn. So if you want to get into broadcast, try like grab a random episode of a TV show you love and recreate it. Film it yourself shot for shot. Try to match as many angles as possible. You'll learn so much in doing that. You'll understand the timing, the pacing, how scripts work way better than just continuing to make your own videos. And then you wouldn't upload that, of course, but you would learn from that and then adapt it into your own mm-hmm. method to then create from there.
That's a very interesting piece of advice.
Yeah,
yeah, like we did that with a Justin Bieber music video. We took the As Long As You Love Me music video and remade it shot for shot. There are 320 shots in that video and it took us 6 months and we recreated everyone. We learned so much about lenses and cameras and angles and everything just from that. It was one of the best learning experiences I've ever had.
And you know that song's going to be in my head all day long now, right?
You're welcome. That's free of charge. Yeah.
So moving on, let's keep this advice train rolling and get into some more practical tips and tactics for creators who want to make the leap to broadcast television. So first, let's set some expectations. What is the current TV landscape like in Canada from your perspective when it comes to opportunities and funding?
I actually think it's getting better for digital creators and self-distributors. There is finally a recognition now that independent creators creating online have value to broadcasters. For a very long time, it was, oh, these people in their basements making cat videos and slime videos. I think there's a recognition now that at the end of the day, the audience is going to win and we need to find a way. The broadcasters are looking for a way, like StoryHive has done well, to properly work with creators. What I've been seeing lately is there used to be a world where Netflix or HBO Max or something, they would go take a creator, bring that creator into their own environment and say, now you work here like us, have fun. What's happening now is those same broadcasters and production houses are looking at creators and going, how do we work more like you? Let's get into a relationship together and figure out how we can help you and you can help us. And it's not we own you anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think two of the biggest shifts I've seen is Peacock, NBC, just released a bunch of creator-led TV shows with a bunch of creators that came to Buffer in the past. And so I got a whole bunch of messages of like, oh, like your old friends are like, they just launched their own TV shows with Peacock and I'm super stoked for them. That's amazing and good for Peacock. And then the other way I'm seeing it now is a lot of TV shows, they're like, we're going into production. We're going to be filming all summer. Can you as a creator just come on set and do whatever you would do? Like film what you would want to film with what we currently have and make content from that. So it's almost like there's really this merger is really, really starting.
What would you tell creators when it comes to how to pitch their content or their personal brand to an actual TV network then?
That's a tougher one. So I will say, I think it's important for digital creators to start exposing themselves to the traditional world in a traditional way. And by that, I mean, go to conferences, go to these pitch markets, talk to people in broadcast. One of the challenges that digital creators find themselves in is they're so used to their own bubble and their own way of doing things that much like the traditional media, they're not willing to go out and understand how the other world works. So my advice would be to go to these conferences that have pitch markets and actually pitch. What I wouldn't do is go and pitch, I have 7 million subscribers. You should give me a show and you should pay me the same way that like AdSense pays me, right? Don't try and pitch what you do online to work in broadcast because that's not going to work. Have a pitch deck, which you might not be used to making, but have your pitch ready. Have a clear plan on what you want to make because they're not just hiring you. They're hiring for a specific piece of content.
The other thing would be versatility. It's like when a creator goes to a broadcaster and says like, I'm super popular and I make these videos, the broadcaster could be like, well, that's great, but we need to pivot the way you make videos. And if a creator goes and says like, look, I've made short films, I've worked with people before, I'm familiar with script editing and revisions and working with other partners and making changes and adaptations to the content, it's going to show the broadcaster that you're more willing to play ball as opposed to just kind of like imposing yourself.
Yeah, it's really good advice. Now, talking about them creating content, Corrado, I'm going to throw this next question over to you. What kind of challenges can creators face when they are trying to adapt their existing content that they do have on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram for TV audiences?
I think it's going to depend a lot on where it's going. For example, this is a true story. So I did 6 years of daily vlogs, which is every day you film your life for 6 years and upload the next day. Highly do not recommend.
That's commitment.
I was like, yeah, commitment, impressive. Wow.
It's commitment. As part of our team, we had this one girl who was the one who was purely in charge of editing every day. She's now my wife and has somehow survived the whole ordeal. And so like, don't recommend it. But we were approached by a broadcaster and they were like, well, you have a 6-year TV show where like you go on travels and adventures and you have drama. And like, there's like, this is a show, like a reality show. And we had a good discussion with them about how could we package that for TV. And the one thing that we had to come to terms with is we would just have to hand it over. And then they would cut it according to their 22-minute put pieces together and take pieces out. And there's like a scary loss of control mm-hmm. where they might have been like, we don't know. Are they going to make me look bad? So there is a little bit of loss of control that could come with it if you have to give it up. But I think as long as you're okay with the changes you need to make and you realize that whatever you filmed in the past is done and it's like it has its own life and you're willing to make the changes, I think it's okay.
Well, speaking of the loss of control then, how can creators still own their audience?
As long as you get to leave your content online at the end of the day, then you can still build your audience.
Okay.
But a lot of times you might have to take it down. Like there was talks of like, well, if we're going to take all this content and put it up on TV, we don't want it existing on the internet because then they could watch it elsewhere. So if we did continue down the path, then we would have like essentially lost one of our audience incomes. So this kind of goes back to what Scott says is you have to own it. Like we had mailing lists and we had Twitter and we had Tumblr accounts back in the day. I think it's still a thing. So like, you know, we had audiences in other ways where that wasn't much of a concern, but it could definitely be one. Especially if I think broadcasters now are looking to just buy YouTube channels, like acquire whole channels. And with that, your audience goes with them. So you really need to own your audience in second places.
There's actually a tactical, real technical issue in the creator-broadcaster relationship. When creators work with a lot of broadcasters, and if you're a creator in Canada, you could work with a broadcaster in Ireland, you could work with a broadcaster in Britain, you could work with a broadcaster in India. The challenge is a lot of those broadcasters, not StoryHive, want exclusivity over the regional content that you're making, right? So if you sign up with BBC in the UK, BBC is going to say, okay, but you have to take this content down in the UK. You can show it anywhere else. We don't care. And that's a real like technical, tactical issue that creators are going to run into if they're entering into these relationships with broadcasters that are geolocated.
Anything else you'd like to add? Because we're coming to the end of our episode. Anything that we haven't touched on, be it the digital space, broadcast TV, or advice for creators?
All I'd like to leave with is the media and the world of attention understands what's going on now. And I don't think they did 5 years ago. And there's a world of opportunity and everybody's trying to figure it out, whether or not that's OTT or FAST or a broadcaster or your own self-distribution. The best thing about right now is there is an optimism and an openness that it's not us versus them anymore. And it really was for a long time. It was, oh, those guys are making this and nobody's watching my stuff and their stuff is trash and my stuff is better. I just want to end on a positive note. Like there is an openness and a willingness to find new solutions to not even problems, to opportunities. And I think any creator listening to this who wants to explore those opportunities, do it, because there's so many different ways that you can do it now. Mm-hmm. And while you're exploring them, find a way to own your audience, because they're, at the end of the day, they're actually what is valuable for you and for everybody.
If you don't have an audience, where's your content going? Corrado, did you have anything else you wanted to touch on?
I'll give the flip side, the other side of Scott's coin. There is a ton of opportunities, but I think it's also, we're best positioned to learn everything we need to learn right now. In 2013, back in the OG days of YouTube, we were just figuring it out. We're just doing stuff and seeing what worked and what didn't work. But now the path has been trailblazed. Like there is a path. You can learn anything you want to learn now on YouTube. You can learn editing in 3 weeks with worldwide knowledge. You can go to all these events. There's more creator and digital events every year. Just I feel like the amount of events are almost doubling every year. So you can learn almost anything. Opportunities are there. It's just the time is, I feel like the time is always now, but the time is now. It's go time if you're interested in it.
This has been super informative, guys. I think there's lots here for our creators to consider. But before we wrap up, are there any resources or organizations you can recommend for people who'd like to learn more about what we've been talking about today?
Yeah, so selfishly, digitalfirstcanada.ca, there are a bunch of resources there for creators. You can catch up on what's going on in the exciting world of Canadian media policy and the CRTC and all those important things, as well as bufferfestival.com, and see what's coming out and what's coming up for that too.
Selfishly, I would say canadiancreator.com, which is where I post all of my...
Who's waiting for it?
Yeah, there it is. That's where I post all of my YouTube learnings and all the education stuff that I post. I take a lot of questions from people. Really love helping now pass the torch, teach people. But otherwise, I think one of the best resources is just, it's just YouTube. Everything is there.
Can't think of the number of times that I go and YouTube it. I'm like, okay, what am I trying to learn?
It's the number two search engine in the world next to Google.
So those are all great resources. Thank you so much for sharing. And of course, we should do our little selfless plug for Tell a Story Hive. So make sure you're checking us out as well as another resource. Scott Corrado, thank you so much for spending time with us here on First Print.
Thanks, guys.
Really appreciate everyone's time. Thanks, everyone.
This has been another great discussion, Jen. What stands out the most to me, though, was when I think Scott was talking about when you go to a broadcaster, making sure that you're understanding that you should be going with a pitch deck. Like it's not the same as when you're creating content on your own, and that you should really be going out to all those different organizations. I think he said conferences, networking events in the broadcasting industry if you're trying to break into it, but also realize it's going to be very different than what you were doing as a content creator, what you're going to be doing on the broadcast side.
Absolutely. I think for me, kind of reading between the lines of everything that they're saying is making sure that if you are hoping to move over into the broadcast space and you're just learning, really making sure that you're doing your due diligence when it comes to research and understanding what a broadcaster is asking of you as a creator, what they're asking from your content, and how you may have to shift or pivot in order to align with what a broadcaster is actually doing. Not every broadcaster is the same, but really understanding what that ask is,
yeah,
and making sure that that fits your strategy of where you want to go with your content. And is that something that you're actually comfortable doing? So that's it for this episode of First Frame, brought to you by Tell a Story Hive. Thanks so much to you, our viewers and listeners, for joining us.
Please hit follow so you don't miss a single episode. And be sure to tune in next time when we're going to focus on a topic that comes up a lot: building support for your project and rallying your creative community.
If you'd like to learn more about how Tell a Story Hive can help you along your content creation journey, you can check out storyhive.com. Until next time, I'm Jennifer Park.
And I'm Cameron Zinger. And that's a wrap.